Good. So I think that we're ready to start to today's shiur. Today's shiur is devoted to the subject of arkos, of secular courts. There is a prohibition against utilizing secular courts in halacha. It's based on the pasuk at the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. Ve'ela mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem. These are the ordinances that you're supposed to place in front of them. What does it mean in front of them? Lifneihem, v'lo lifnei arkos. It's supposed to be that when you have civil court disputes and you have monetary matters and other types of disputes within the community, they need to be adjudicated. So you're not allowed to bring the adjudication in front of the secular courts. You're obligated to bring it in front of the Bezdin, the Tashbates. And I think most authorities assume that this is an Issa D'Araisa. I mean, Issa essay. Lava Babak Lal essay is considered to be an essay, positive commandment based on Ve'ela Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifneihem, that there is a biblical obligation not to go in front of the secular courts. I'd like to say that this is sort of the flip side of the affirmative obligation that we find in Parsha Shoftim of Shoftim Mishotrim Titen L'cha B'chol She'arecha, that we have an obligation to establish Batei Din in every single city, at every single point in time in Jewish history. There's an obligation to establish Jewish courts because in addition to the prohibition of going to secular courts, you have to provide for the venue of Jewish courts, of Batei Din, of rabbinical courts that are going to adjudicate the case according to halacha. It's interesting, there's a tshuva by Rav Shmuel Vosner in the Shevet HaLevi, Chelek Yud Siman Reish Samach Gimel, it's in your materials towards the end of the materials, where he also quotes another pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, which is Ad Elokim Yavo Devar Shneihem. That we see from the pasuk that you must go to Elokim is a reference to the Batei Din. You have to go to the rabbinical courts. That there is another pasuk that teaches us sort of the same principle. If there is a litigation, there's an obligation. You go to Bezdin and you don't go to secular court. The various poskim point out, Vosner, others, the Tashbates, this doesn't only apply to a situation where you're dealing with Ovdei Avodah Zarah, where the courts are an Akum, that they are idolaters, that they are pagans. Any time that you have a non-Jewish court, it's basically a repudiation of the system of justice that was given to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Rashi gives as the tam, as the reasoning behind this prohibition, that you shouldn't be miyaker elilim, that you are giving a glorification of a non-Jewish system, whether you're dealing with idols, whether you're dealing with some other secular non-Jewish system, it's a glorification of something other than Ad Elokim Yavo Devar Shneihem, other than the divine system of law that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us, and therefore there will be a prohibition regardless of the nature of the secular courts in question. The Rambam gives a separate explanation as to the nature of the prohibition, that it's not only being miyakir alilim, that you're glorifying a different system of justice other than the Torah system of divine justice, but it's also shlo laharim yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu, that it's also an affront, that it's an affront against Toras Moshe Rabbeinu, that you are repudiating Torah law. There are different various ramifications of both of these different reasons that are provided by the Rishonim for the Issa Arkos, for the prohibition of going to Arkos. One ramification is that even if they're dinim, even if according to the first reason, that it's considered to be a glorification of a different system of law, of a different court system. So even if that court system would happen to have the same law in a particular case, their law would be identical to Torah law. So you'd say, okay, it's not Meirim Yad B'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. Their result is going to be identical to the result that would follow according to Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. It would still be prohibited. Similarly, let's say you're not going to adjudicate in front of them. You just say, I'm going to go in front of a small claims court, and I'll just have an arbitrator who's not going to be bound by the statutes of secular law. He's just going to be empowered to decide the case based on common sense principles, which can be culled from anything. It doesn't have to be secular law. It could just be whatever the judge considers to be fair and just. So you'll say, That's not Meir Miyad B'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu, because it's not as if the decision is going to be based on a secular law system. It's going to be based upon just the judgment and the common sense of the arbitrator. But if the small claims court is a part and parcel of a secular court system, meaning you go to the courthouse, and part of the court system is that if your claim is below a certain amount of money, so they send you to the small claims court section and you have an arbitrator who decides the case, let's say, according to just common sense and principles, but because of the fact that it's part of the court system, so that also would be a violation of Torah law. That's what Rabbi Bleich points out based on the Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat, Simen Samech Ches. It talks about Pshara Lifnei Arkos. Even a Pshara, even if you have just a kind of a compromise type of a decision that's going to be handed down by a small claims court judge, that would also be Miyakir Shem Alilim, because you're subscribing to their court system rather than a Beis Din system. At the Beis Din of America in the early years when I was serving as the Menayo, when I was serving as the director there, so we used to have a certain day that would be set aside during the week that people would have small claims types of cases would be able to just walk in. We would have walk-ins, and we would deal with all of the small claims matters so that they would have a venue, even for small petty matters. They're arguing about $100, $1,000, whatever it is, that they shouldn't go to the secular courts to resolve even those matters, because even a din of a pruta, it says the Shulchan Aruch deserves the same attention and is subject to the same rules that it's supposed to be brought in front of a Beis Din. Similarly, let's say that you're not adjudicating the case, you know, per se, but you just want to utilize the secular courts in order to threaten a person who's not paying you on time, that you have an outstanding debt, a school has an outstanding tuition payment that hasn't been made by some parents of some children or a college student, and they want to hire a collection agency. And the collection agency, on behalf of that Jewish institution, is going to send out a letter. And they're going to say that if you don't pay your obligation immediately, then we're going to take you to secular court. It's a threat. It's an iyum. They're going to threaten them to go to secular court. So here as well, you have many poskim who point out that this would also be a violation of Miyakir Shem Alilim, that you're using the secular court system as a sort of your preferred system of law in order to threaten and intimidate the other party to pay, even if it's paying something which they might owe, even according to Torah law, they might owe that amount of money. But you're utilizing, rather than utilizing the Beis Din system, you're utilizing the court system for that purpose. So that also is considered to be Miyakir Shem Alilim. There's a diuk to this effect, because if you look in the Shulchan Aruch has two different lashonos regarding the prohibition of utilizing secular courts for adjudication. The first lashon is also ladun mifnei dayanei akum. You're not allowed to adjudicate the case in front of a dayanei akum. And then a couple of lines later, the Shulchan Aruch says in Simen Chabav, v'chol haba lidom mifneim areza rasha. And anybody who comes in order to adjudicate in front of him is a Rasha. So the question is, why do you have that double Rasha? Number one, Asur Ladun, and then V'chol Haba Lidom HaRezer Rasha. So some poskim are medayek that these are two different things. One is adjudicating the case, which is prohibited in its own right. Number one, because in Miyakir Shem Alilim. Number two, Yomeirim Yad B'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. But number two, Kol Haba Lidon, even if you're just beginning, you're initiating the process in secular court, you're not ultimately adjudicating there because you're just threatening to go to secular court. Most poskim say that also is prohibited. I think there's a shita that they quote from Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin, who says, okay, you're just saying that you're going to go, but you don't actually go. You're not following through on it. It's not necessarily the prohibition. But the consensus is that it really is the prohibition. It's consistent even with the halacha, which is brought in at the Ramah. Afilu eino don lifnei akum, even if you're not adjudicating in front of the non-Jewish court, but rather rak shekofeo ayidei akum shiyamo nimo ledin Yisrael. You just go to the non-Jewish court in order to compel the other party to come in front of the Beis Din. You figure nothing wrong with that, but because of the fact the Beis Din itself is not involved at the beginning, you're initiating the case through the secular court without the permission or authorization of the Beis Din. So that also is miyakev shem alilim. It's a badly don lipneihem. You're initiating the process with them. You're indicating they're the ones who are in charge. So that's something which could be a violation of miyakev shem alilim. Now, nowadays, a Beis Din will generally leave to a party if they have already agreed to come to Beis Din, and one party is refusing to come to Beis Din, the Beis Din will generally either explicitly or implicitly give authorization to one party to compel arbitration, to compel the other party to come in front of Beis Din. But that's because they've already signed the Shtar Birurin. They've initiated the process through Beis Din. Once it's initiated through Beis Din, it's a different story. But the idea of initiating a litigation process through the secular court system, so that is a problem of miyakir shem alilim. On the other hand, you also have to factor in the reason of the Rambam, that it's Meirim Yad B'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu, but that going to the secular court is considered to be a rejection and repudiation of Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. So here, this plays out in the following types of ways as well. Number one, even if you're dealing with people who are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah, as we said before, so it's still a Meirim Yad B'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. If you're embracing a system other than Torah law, that's a Meirim Yad B'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. In fact, that's what the Chazon Ish said is the reason why he protested very, very strongly against the creation of what was essentially and effectively a secular court system within Eretz Yisrael. When the Medina in Eretz Yisrael was established, so rather than having a system built in where every single time that there would be a dispute, parties would always have to go to Beis Din, they established a court system that was not predicated upon Toras Moshe Rabbeinu, not predicated upon Jewish law. They said for matters of gittin, for matters of divorce, and for matters of personal status, gerus, or marriage, so then you have to go to the Rabbanut courts. That's all fine and good. But for any other matters, monetary disputes and the like, so the system of law that was enacted in Israel was that they established a separate standalone bagatz, a separate standalone secular court system that was based upon Turkish law. It was based upon British law. It was based upon European court systems that had nothing to do with Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. I remember when I was in law school, I took a course with a person who was, I think, the Chief Justice of the Israeli Supreme Court at the time. He came in. It was a big cover to give a class at Yale. So they brought him in, and he was giving a class on judicial discretion, how cases should be decided when it's sort of a close call, and what's considered to be appropriate discretionary tactics or considerations that would be utilized by judges in rendering the final verdict in the case. And he wrote this whole book in which he quoted from the different styles of judicial discretion that you find in Roman law, in Greek law, in Ottoman law, in British law, and different legal systems throughout the ages. But I noticed he didn't really touch upon Jewish law at all. So at one point I turned to him and I said, you're talking about judicial discretion, how to decide cases when it could really go either way. Is it just a toss up of the coin? Is it that the judges just have to use their best judgment, even if there isn't a clear legal principle? So I said, how come you don't discuss a shuda d'daini? That's the kind of the equivalent term that's utilized in the Gemara when it comes to judicial discretion. So he said, shuda d'daini, what's that? So it's very important that we should have within our own system, within our own country in Eretz Yisrael, that the courts should be predicated upon the Torah law that should be taken into consideration. Even the whole Mishpat Ivri movement was a little bit misleading. That was something which Menachem Elon, a very fine from Talmud Chacham, who served as a judge in the Israeli court system, so he tried to introduce this notion of Mishpat Ivri, that we should incorporate notions of Jewish law into that secular court system. The problem was, number one, even that notion was just one type of a legal system that's going to be considered together with all of the others. That also is Meirim Yad B'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu, to say that it shouldn't be more significant than the other systems. Number two, it really wasn't part of the actual law. he would have a verdict in a case that was based on whatever were the civil law statutes that had been enacted in Eretz Yisrael. And then he would say, oh, and by the way, he'd have a 20-page discussion. This is what Jewish law has to say on the subject. How would he reconcile what Jewish law had to say on the subject with what the final verdict was? So he would always employ general principles. Well, Tina de Machusa, the law of the land, Minhag HaSochim, and this is what people do based on the law of the land. So in the end, it all works out anyway, but it wasn't really true. It wasn't a real application of a Torah's Moshe. So the Chazon Ish was very, very upset about the creation of a secular legal system within Eretz Yisrael. It's a very strong shuva you'll find in your materials in the Yechaveh Das by Rav Avadya Yosef Zatzal on this subject as well. Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, certainly a very enlightened person, was also very up in arms against the creation of this separate court system. Of Tzvi Pesach Frank was up in arms against it. There was opposition by really all of the major gedolim against it. And what's, you know, a major consideration? It was that it's Meirim Yad B'Torah Moshe Rabbeinu. You're lifting up your hand and repudiating the system of law that was enacted by Moshe Rabbeinu, that was given by a Kodesh Baruch Hu to Moshe Rabbeinu. And this is, even if the judges are all going to be 100% Jewish, even if the judges would be from, if the system of law that the judges are adopting is a foreign law, it's a secular law, so therefore, even then, you're going to have a problem of our coast, and not because of the fact that you're going to non-Jewish judges, but because of the fact that you're considered to be Meirim Yad B'Torah Moshe Rabbeinu. So here you have the question mark. The what if everybody agrees that they don't mind doing it? In other words, you have the parties agree amongst themselves. They say you have two Jewish parties, and they say, we're comfortable going to the secular court system. Can you have a t'nai in which the parties say that it's going to be acceptable that they're going to go to the secular court system? After all, we have a general principle called t'nai shebe momon kayim, that any two people, any two Jews, can make a t'nai, can make a condition in monetary matters, even if that condition is not 100% consistent with the Jewish law. Like, for example, a shomer chinam, who normally would be potter in the event of a geneva va'aveda, can stipulate he's going to be chayev in a case of a geneva va'aveda. Or a shomer sachar, who normally would be chayev in a case of geneva va'aveda, can make a stipulation he's going to be potter in a case of geneva va'aveda. So the Mishnah Gemara and Baba Metzia Daf Tzadi Dalet says that that's completely permissible. Why? Because fundamentally we hold like Rabbi Yehuda, that you can make a t'nai with respect to monetary matters, even if the condition that you make is different from that which the Torah would otherwise allow, as long as both parties to a transaction agree that they're going to follow a different t'nai, they're going to follow a different condition, a different set of monetary rules. So why then can you make a t'nai? You have two parties and both of them agree up front that they want to go to a secular court and they don't want to go to a Besin. Would that be considered to be acceptable? So the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Chavav says very, very clearly that this is not acceptable. Why is it not acceptable? So the answer is that you can make a t'nai when it's a davar shebemamon. If it's only a monetary matter, you can make a condition. You can't make a condition, even if it involves monetary matters, if it's in the realm of Issur V'Heter. Two Jews have no ability to make a condition that they're going to violate Shabbos together, or that they're going to engage in commerce with respect to Chazir. You can't make a t'nai if it's a davar shebe iser. So going to secular court system, that's the idea. This is an iser. That it's an iser, it's considered to be an iser essay. It's a violation of Torah law to go to the secular courts. Of course, it's a davar shebe iser, says the Ramban in his commentary to the very first pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim. This is also the beginning of your materials. He said that for this reason, it would be considered to be usher, even if Ratzu Shnei Balei Adin, even if they agreed between themselves that they're going to go Lifnei HaKnanim in front of the non-Jews, Asur Meim Lavo, their Lefanam, Shiyodun Lahem Beneim Liolam. It's going to be forbidden to implement that tanai, that condition. As we said before, even if the laws would be exactly the same, because it's still considered to be miyakashe melidim. But, says the Ramban, this is different from one other law, which is derived from the pasuk of lifnehem, and that's lifnehem, below lifnehem yotos. The reference to lifnehem is a reference to the dayanim of Klal Yisrael, as Rashi and Tosfos point out. But let's say that the two parties on their own say in front, instead of going in front of Augusta Dayanim, who are very proficient in all aspects of Jewish law, we're going to go in front of Hedyotas. We'll go in front of Jewish judges, but we'll go in front of Jewish judges who are not all that knowledgeable. So says the Ramban that if there is a Kiblu Alayu, there's a Kabbalah that they make a Tanai that they accept upon themselves, that they're going to go in front of Hedyotas, so then that's going to be permissible. So then the question is, so why then would it be a problem if you had two Jews when you set up a secular court system within Eretz Yisrael? And let's say you had two Jews who decide on their own that they both agree that they're going to go in front of the bagatz. They're both comfortable going in front of the secular courts as opposed to going in front of a beis din. So why don't we just say that's not an example of lifnehem v'lo lifnei akum? That's an example of lifnehem v'lo lifnei hedyotos. They're just going in front of three Jewish judges, let's say, who are not that knowledgeable in Jewish law, and they're going to decide according to their own abilities. Why don't we say that this is not considered to be a secular court? This is just considered to be the Lifnei Hedyotos, and the Ramban said the Lifnei Hedyotos is going to be okay. So the Ramban says that you can't do that, and he explains as following. The Chazon Ish, in his discussion of the secular court system, so Chazon Ish says like this. This is on page 31 of your materials. It's in Sanhedrin, Simen Tes Vav in the Chazon Ish. He says that even if you would have a case where there were no dayanim available to decide according to Dinei Torah, let's say you had a community where there were no knowledgeable people, that's not true in Eretz Yisrael. Baruch Hashem. Now it's Kimitzion Teitzei Sorod Var Hashem Yerushalayim that we have Baruch Hashem, lots of knowledgeable Dayanim and Tami Dekochamim within Eretz Yisrael, but it would still be prohibited. You wouldn't be allowed as a Jewish population to devise a separate standalone secular court system based on secular statutes. There's a Rashba in Maseches Sanhedrin at the beginning of the Perek Zebor Lo Echad, where the Rashba says that if you had a community where you didn't have proficient dayanim, so you would be allowed to just appoint people who had their own common sense, Jewish judges with common sense to decide cases according to principles of common sense as opposed to Torah, because they don't know any Torah. So there you can appoint them to be the Dayanim. This is the idea that the Gemara there talks about as of our Kos Shebesuria. It's not a real our Kos because you're dealing with Jewish judges, but they're just not that knowledgeable. Our Kos Shebesuria, he says, that in such a situation, you could appoint three upstanding Jewish citizens to hear disputes. If they have serious questions, they can consult with Dayanim elsewhere, but otherwise, they're going to decide according to their common sense. Some of the rabbis at the time of the Hakama Samedina wanted to make the argument that, well, if you have a court system made up of Jews and they're just deciding according to other principles, why isn't that like Akol Sasher Pesuria? After all, the Meiri, in his commentary to the Gemara in Sanhedrin over there, says, how do these judges who are not so knowledgeable, they're hedyotos, basically, how are they going to decide cases? They're going to decide be'omid datum. They're going to decide according to their own common sense. Plus they're going to decide v'chukim v'nimusim. They're going to utilize chukim, actual statutes, presumably, since these are not Talmidei Chachamim, these are the equivalent of secular law statutes and nimusim, and the general customs that are followed in that part of the world. They're going to follow those protocols in terms of how they're going to decide cases. So Rabbi Shlomo Gorin, wanted to make the argument, and Menachem Eilon tried to make a similar argument, that the secular courts in Israel may not be so bad because it fits within the parameters of the Meiri, that we just have these hedyotos that are the Jewish hedyotos that are deciding according to Chukim and Nimusim. So what? They're guided based on the Knesset statutes as opposed to the Torah statutes. The Meiri says that's okay, it's HaKol Shebisuria. So there are two problems with that. One problem with that is that the Arkol Shebisuria is only set up when you don't have Dayanim who are proficient, when you don't have Bati Din that are available. Baruch Hashem and Eretz Yisrael, you have big poskim and Talmidei Chachamim and Dayanim who are available. That's number one. Number two, even the Meiri, when he spoke about the methodology of the Arkol Shebisuria, the Meiri didn't say that they decide solely based on chukim, on the chukim, on the statutes of the secular systems. He said, meaning they can draw from pretty much anything which is out there. They're going to use their common sense, but sometimes they're not exactly sure what's the best implementation of their common sense. It's a complex case, so they might look and see, what does this statute say? What does that statute say? They can read the statutes of the secular systems more easily than they can read the halachas in the Shulchan Aruch. So they'll confer with, they'll consult with those statutes, but not that they consider, as Rav Avram Sherman writes, not that they consider those statutes to be binding upon them, that this is a system that they're obligated to follow, some sort of an alternative legal system. They'll take everything into consideration, everything that they research, everything that they find on the internet, they're going to take into consideration. But not that they're bound by those statutes. Once they become bound by that statutes, that becomes Meirim Yad B'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. And this is what the Chazon Ish says over here as well. And with respect to the court systems that were set up in Eretz Yisrael, you can't take upon yourself a secular legal system or to make your own separate statutes that are contrary to those of the Torah. If a person is just deciding a case based on their common sense, okay, that's what we call pshara. That's what we call trying to make good compromises in different cases and decide according to equity, but you're not utilizing any legal system. That's not a repudiation of Torah per se. And it's not a clear repudiation of the Torah. However, if everybody agrees that they're going to follow certain set statutes that are separate and distinct and different from those of the Torah, that's considered to be a chilul Torah. So says the Chazon Ish, that would be a violation of lifneim lo lifnei adyotos. The kasha is, no, if it's only a violation of lifneim lo lifnei adyotos, as opposed to lifneim lo lifnei akum, you're not going in front of non-Jewish judges, you're going in front of Jewish judges who happen to be adyotos. Didn't the Ramban say in his commentary to Parshas Mishpatim that you can make a tanai, you can make a condition along those lines? So that's what the Chazon Ish addresses in his very next paragraph. He says, when it comes to this violation, it doesn't matter if they're Jewish or not. Or you have a Jew who's going to decide according to statutes that he has made up, that they've made up in the Knesset. He says, that's actually worse. That here you have Jewish judges who have a Torah system of law and they're rejecting it for a different alternative system of law. And even if all of the citizens, you have many citizens who go along with it and say, we prefer to have a separate court system that's based on British and Ottoman law. Their consent and their agreement is worthless. It's worth nothing. And especially you're going to force people to do it, then that's considered to be theft. And it's considered to be oppression. And listen to the next few words of the Ramban. Why is this not acceptable, even if it's in the form of a tanai that people have accepted upon themselves? Because it constitutes a repudiation and rejection of Torah's Moshe. This, as the Rambam says, the second reason that we gave for the Yisr Arkos, it's a repudiation of Torah law if you incorporate a separate secular system and you're going to use that as an alternative to the Torah, that you're not going to use Torah law. You're going to have your court systems, even if they're Jewish judges, and they're going to be bound by a separate secular law. So that runs afoul of Meirim Yad B'Torahs Moshe. Once it's Meirim Yad B'Torahs Moshe, then there's no heter of Tanai anymore, because then it enters into the realm of Issur Heter. Then it becomes not a Dovah Shebamamon. It's not a monetary condition, but it becomes a condition with respect to ritual prohibitions, and you're not allowed to make a condition to violate a ritual prohibition. So therefore, that would not be permitted either. So then the question becomes, on some level, what if you have a Beis Din which is going to decide a particular case according to secular law, not because the system of the Beis Din is a system of secular law statutes per se, but because the parties come to the Beis Din, they make a tanai in a particular case. They say to the Beis Din, we engage in a business transaction. We operate within the secular world, and therefore our expectations are according to the commercial customs of the secular world. So we want you to decide our dispute according to commercial customs. Maybe they even have a contract in which the contract says explicitly that any dispute that arises between us is going to be decided according to principles of New York law. New York law is going to govern. In any standard contract, you typically have two sections towards the end of the contract where you have the boilerplate provisions. One section is called choice of law, and another section is called choice of venue. So choice of law, they might say, we want New York law to govern our transaction. Then you have choice of venue. Choice of venue says any dispute that arises between us is going to be resolved in the New York court system. So when it comes to choice of law, we've made it very, very clear that you're not allowed, even as an agreed upon condition between the two parties, that you're going to choose as your choice of venue. You can't choose as your choice of venue. You can't say we're going to adjudicate the case in front of the New York courts, because that would be a violation of Lifneim, below Lifneiakum, that you're not allowed to go in front of the non-Jewish courts. That's what it says explicitly in Shulchan Aruch. That's the choice of venue clause. But what about when it comes to the choice of law clause? If they write in the choice of law clause that we'll go in front of a Beis Din. They write in the choice of venue, we agree we're going to go in front of the Beis Din. But in the choice of law, they say we want the Beis Din to decide according to New York law. So is that also included within Meirim Yad B'Torahs Moshe Rabbeinu? Here you have major, major dispute amongst the various poskim as to whether this would be a violation as well, and something that could not be countenanced by a Beis Din when they're deciding the case. Is this also considered to be Meirim Yad B'Torahs Moshe Rabbeinu? So there is a Churas HaRashba that discusses this, really a famous Churas HaRashba, Nechelik Vav of the Churas HaRashba, in Simon Reish Nundalit. It's in the materials. And the Rashba says, in the following case, he talks about a Yerusha case, that there was a couple that got married, and the father of the wife gave an adunya, gave a substantial dowry. And then after about a year of marriage or so, there was a child, and the child died, and the wife died. And now the husband would stand to inherit everything from his wife. According to Torah law, a husband inherits his wife, and the father-in-law of the surviving husband, namely the father of the deceased wife, says that he wants the amount that he gave as a dowry. He wants it back. According to Torah law, the entire estate of the wife goes to the husband. So he said that, but in the secular court system of where they lived, it was understood that if after a short period of time, the wife would die and there would be no child, so then the dowry goes back to the father and it doesn't go to the husband. So therefore, he wanted everything to be decided according to what would be secular law. So the Rashba is a very confusing tshuva, where the Rashba starts out and he says, well, kol davar shebamamon tino kayim. If there would be a condition along these lines, if the parties would make such a condition, that they're going to follow this monetary principle, that in the event that the wife should die, then the dowry, the amount of the dowry, will go back to the father who gave it and won't go in inheritance to the husband. So we have a general principle that called davar sheba mamon kayim, that we respect monetary conditions between the parties. But then says the Rashba, when we call makom lino kein neshu mishpat goyim. But if you're going to follow this is on page 11 of the materials. If you're going to follow this because of the fact that this is the mishpat goyim, that you want to follow the secular law and you have some sort of a reverence for the secular law, and that's why you're following it, not because it's an independent tanai that the parties would have otherwise made by themselves. Bamis nearly sha'asur. So he says, I think that would be prohibited. Because in that particular case, he says, what are you doing? You're doing it for the purpose of imitating the goyim. You're doing it because, and not because of the fact that this is something that the parties independently felt is considered to be a fair monetary condition. Not like the shomer Achinam, who says, okay, well, you know, in for you, I'll be mechayev myself in the case of Gneiv of Beida. They're saying, well, we don't really trust the Torah law system. We don't respect the Torah law system. We want our affairs to be governed according to secular law. We want to be copycats of the secular. We have greater respect for the secular court. That's the idea of mechakes agayim. So then the Rashba says that that would be awesome in such a case. Then the Rashba veers off to another discussion and says, what about Dina de Machusa? You'll say, well, maybe you should follow this because it's just the law of the land. So the Rashba explains the law of the land might be applicable if I have a transaction where a Jew is involved in a contract with a non-Jew. So then the non-Jew follows the law of the land. He's not bound by Torah law per se. So then you follow the law of the land. The law of the land, he says, when it comes to the commerce of a Jew, is really only pertinent when it comes to, for example, the obligation to pay taxes to the government. That's something which is based on Dinan de Malchusa. But he said that if I have a monetary transaction between two Jews, now, I'm going to say in every single monetary transaction that is going to be governed by Dina de Malchusa, I may as well just put away all this farm in the base medrash, put away the Shulchan Aruch, put away all of the discussions that are codified by Ravina and Rav Ashi in the Gemara, and the Gemara should just wear sackcloth and ashes because we're basically doing away with the Gemara altogether. He said, that's not the application of Dina de Malchusa. If I have a dispute between two Jews, of course it's supposed to be governed by Torah law. That's not the application of Dina de Malchusa. Now the king, he says, the king makes certain laws that are binding upon all of his residents, so he cares that they all pay taxes. Does he care if two Jews have a dispute with each other, they're going to go to their local bezdin, they're going to decide their contract dispute, their loan dispute, their partnership dispute, their landlord-tenant dispute in accordance with principles of Torah? The king, the government could care less. It's perfectly fine. However people want to resolve their disputes, their private disputes, is perfectly fine. That's not included within Dina de Malchusa. However, he said that when it comes to people making a private contract with each other, so then this is, it goes back to that principle at the very end of his tshuva as well. If you have the notion of a person is a kibil, a love lelech b'zeh b'dini ha-malchus, that if a person between one person and another, they enter into a transaction and they say that they're comfortable following the law of the land in an individual transaction. So he said, no, that's okay. That's a davash b'mamon, yachol the shabit asmum litei mishalo shlo minadin. The davash b'mamon, a person can make that voluntary determination. So the Rashba seems to be saying two things. Seems to be saying, number one, that Dina de Malchusa does not apply as a broad concept to monetary transactions between Jews. But if two Jews will decide on their own that they want to make a monetary condition that's different from Torah law, and it's not a repudiation of a ritual prohibition in the Torah, so then they can make that type of monetary tanai between themselves, even if it happens to be consistent with secular law. That's what it sounds like from the Rashba. But, says the Rashba, if they're going to do that, based on being mechakes a goyim, they're going to do that based on the fact that they want to imitate the goyim, that they have no respect for Torah law. It's not that they feel this particular monetary condition is consistent with customary practice and the way they want to do business, so therefore they're going to incorporate in this case, but they're just repudiating Torah law altogether and saying they only want secular law to govern all of their transactions in all instances. So then that type of consideration would invalidate the contract, or at least make it prohibited, according to the Rashba. So it would seem to me, and this is sort of the approach that was followed by Rav Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg Zatzal. Interestingly, you find this approach in the Tshuvos of the Minchas Yitzchak as well, that if you have two Jews who in a particular case say, we want this specific monetary transaction to be governed according to secular law, not because we're repudiating Torah law, not because we're accepting upon ourselves the secular law system instead of or as a substitute for Torah law, but just in this case, we want these principles to govern our transaction because it's consistent with the custom in the marketplace. So that would fall within the framework of the Torah's principle of kol tanai shebamam on kayim, that parties can make monetary conditions between themselves. And as long as they're not doing it as a repudiation of Torah per se, but because they happen to like this particular monetary condition for their transactions between each other, that's something that could be respected by a Bezdin. There seems to be a machlokis between the Sma and the Taz potentially in this regard, in Simen Chaf Vav, where the Sma in one place seems to make a suggestion that if parties make a condition that they're going to adjudicate their case in secular court, and that the secular court would give an award, that the Beis Din would not be able to give an award according to Torah law, that could be binding. And the Taz says, "Atu b'Rishi Eskinen," says there's no such thing. It can't be. He mentions a Tshuvas Harash. The Rosh says exactly the opposite. The Rosh speaks about a case where they used to put into their contracts that whenever they would have a dispute, so the person who wants to have the ability, let's say, to collect a debt that he's extending a loan to the other party, says, I have the right to collect it, whether it is according to the laws of the Torah, or even if it's only according to the laws of the secular courts, and even in front of the secular court judges, I'd be allowed to go. So the Rosh says, what do you mean, even in front of the secular court judges? That's a violation, lifnei lo lifnei akum. So the Rosh says that we interpret the contract in a way that would be legitimate according to Torah law. What's the way that it would be legitimate according to Torah law? According to Torah law, sometimes you could take the party to the secular court. How could you take the party to the secular court? So there's one instance that we speak about based on the Gemara, and that is where the side that you summon to Beis Din refuses to go to Beis Din. They're refusing to go to Beis Din. So if they're absolutely refusing to go to Beis Din, then what we call a gavur olam, we have a very strong, obstinate man, a very obstinate party that you're up against in your litigation. So then the Beis Din will give reshus, it will give permission to take that party to secular court, because otherwise the Toveya, the plaintiff, the petitioner, won't be able to recover what's coming to them. So in that case, it would be permissible. So says the Rosh, that's how we're going to interpret the contract. When the contract says between the parties that the person who's making the loan will be able to collect even in front of the Dayani Akum, even in front of the non-Jewish judges, that's talking about a case where the other party is going to refuse to comply or to come to Beis Din. So then the contract says what the halacha is, that the other party, the plaintiff, would be allowed to take him to secular court. The Maharshal goes so far as to say that when it's actually in the contract, where it's clear that the other side is a party that wants to put in the contract that everything should be decided according to secular law, so does that mean you have to walk away from the contract? Let's say that if I have a ribis transaction, a prohibited interest transaction, if I just draw up a contract that says I'm loaning you $100 and you're obligated to pay me back $110, $100 principal, $10 interest. I haven't collected anything yet. Maybe I'll never collect anything. The halacha is even a shuma, even just the document itself, which gives me the right to collect the stipulation, lo sisimun alav neshech, the stipulation itself is considered to be a prohibition. The fact that I've signed that contract is a prohibition. This comes up. Sometimes people don't intend to ever collect interest, but they don't want imputed interest income. According to secular law, if you have just a contract that says this person is not going to pay me back any interest, you're still going to have to pay tax an interest because there is some sort of a principle in secular law of imputed interest income. So parties sometimes want to put in the contract, you'll collect 2 cents of interest, something like that, so that there'll be interest in the contract, whatever it is. It's less than market, the normal market interest, but you won't have more than 2 cents of imputed interest income rather than whatever is the standard amount, so you won't have to pay as much tax. And of course, you're not going to collect any interest because it would be a violation of Torah law. Can you draw up that contract altogether? Some posts can say, yeah, it's obvious that you're only doing it to accommodate the law. And other posts can say, and I think this is more mistaber. I think it's more mistaber. I've discussed this with Rabbi Willig Shlita. He's in agreement as well. You can't draw up such a contract. It's in violation of Losa Simun Olav Neshech. But what if you're entering into a business contract with somebody, and in the business contract, you're dealing with a non-observant Jew, and they insist, I'm not going to enter into this contract unless you put in your choice of venue provision, that the case is going to be adjudicated in front of the secular court. Say, I can't adjudicate in front of the secular court. It's a violation of halacha. But the reality is, you could adjudicate in front of a secular court in the event that the other party refuses to come to Bezin. Refuses to come to Bezin, so then we'll give you a heter al kos. We'll give you permission to go in front of the secular court. So the Marashal says, you can enter into such a contract because it's not your intention to violate a law. It's the other person who wants to go to secular court. And Lamais, it's true. You will be able to go to secular court because he's refusing to go to Beis Din. So says the Marashal, in that type of circumstance where the other party is insisting on putting that clause into the contract, so then you don't even need a heter al kos. You don't need a special heter, a special dispensation from Beis Din to take the person to secular court. You know the person will only go to secular court because they're insisting on putting this in the contract. But what we see from that discussion is that it's not inherently or intrinsically usser to enter into such a contract if the other party is insisting upon it. Otherwise, you're going to lose out on the deal altogether, the way that it would be intrinsically usser to enter into such a provision, for example, in a ribbis transaction, that it just sign a document that says that you're going to collect ribbis, even if you won't at the end of the day. Here, when push comes to shove, you could enter into such a contract, but even when there would be, if it should so happen, a dispute down the road, you should still try at that point in time. Ideally, if the other side does tshuva, and the other side says, you know, when we signed the contract, so I insisted on putting in that clause, but now I've done tshuva, and I realize it was the wrong thing, and I want to go in front of a Beis Din. So then, of course, you have to go in front of a Beis Din. It's just a question as to whether you have the right of making the assumption that the person would refuse to go in front of the Beis Din otherwise. So the Rosh says that's how we interpret the contract. Not that the contract gives you the right, gives the parties the right to intrinsically to go to a secular court. It would be a violation if both of the parties want to go to secular court. Neither one wants to go to Beis Din. They both want to go to secular court, and they put, you know, such a provision in the contract. So of course it's not going to be binding. The Rosh reinterprets it. So you have to reinterpret it in a way that would make sense according to the halacha. So the Sma has this idea that the Taz says he doesn't know where the Sma got this idea from. It sounds from the Sma a little bit. Maybe it's not what the Sma really meant. Maybe it's not what he really meant. But it sounds from the Sma that the Sma, he seems to say it in Siman Kav Vav. He seems to say it in Siman Samach Aleph of Choshen Mishpat as well. That's only when a person theoretically would be able to collect their rights in front of a Beis Din. But if they want some sort of a right that they wouldn't be able to collect in Beis Din, they could only collect in secular courts, and then the Tanai would be binding. The Taz says that can't be. That would be a davar ishus. But then the Taz goes further, and he says that not only that, but even to place a clause in the contract that says that they'll go in front of the Beis Din, but the Beis Din will decide in accordance with some sort of a principle that's contrary to Torah law. So says the Taz, that's not going to work either. However, if you look at the Taz in Siman Samach Aleph, the Taz seems to clarify this comment that he made in Siman Chav Vav, that what he really is talking about is like the following situation. We're about to enter into the Shemitah year. So in the Shemitah year, at the end of the Shemitah year, we have something which is known as Shemitas Ksofim, where there's an automatic cancellation of all loans. If somebody had made a loan to somebody and has a debt that the person owes him, so then when you reach the end of the Shemitah year, that debt is automatically canceled. So if you have two Jews who enter into a contract, and the contract says, Amanash Lotish Mitani Shvius, they say, I'm entering into a contract on condition that the Shemitah year is not going to cancel the loan. So that condition is considered to be null and void. That's what the Gemara says at the beginning of Makos. If they made a condition, however, that says, Amanash Lotish Mitani Bishvius, that even though the Shemitah year, the end of the Shemitah year, is going to cancel all of the loans, we're making a private condition between ourselves that even though the loan is going to be canceled, you are going to repay the loan. You'll repay the loan. Maybe we'll go through the ritual that is prescribed by the Torah and Chazal, that when you repay the loan, I'll say, Meshameh Itani, excuse me, and I'll say that I am canceling the loan because the loan is automatically canceled according to Torah law. And you'll say, Afa Pikein, I'm going to pay. You'll pay anyway. We're going to make a tonight between us that you're going to pay anyway. So says the Gemara, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with that condition. If you're going to say Afa Pikein, nothing wrong with that condition. So says the Taz, that's what's prohibited. You can't make a condition that's going to be a repudiation of Torah law. You can't make a condition, Amanashol Tishmeteni Shias. You can't say the Shemitah year is not going to cancel the loan. The Shemitah year will cancel the loan. But if you enter into a condition that says, I know the Torah law is one thing, but between us, we're still going to arrange that you're going to pay me anyway. You're going to do it in a way which is not a violation of Torah. You're not going to pay me ribbis or something of that variety. You're just going to take upon yourself, as the Rashba writes, to pay something that you wouldn't otherwise be obligated to pay, like Amanash Lotish Mateni Bishvius. So that there's no reason why that shouldn't be binding. So a suggestion was made by Rabbi Tzvi Spitz, who's the Mechaber of Minchas Tzvi, of a sefer on Choshen Mishpat, modern day Shilos that relate to Dayanim. So he suggests that maybe in order to avoid the problem of the Rashba, when the Rashba says that you have to make a tnai in a way which is not mechakes a goyim, which is not giving chashivas, it's not giving special importance to the secular legal system and their statutes. So let's say that you have a statute which is called Choka Mekakoyim. That's what they talk about, the real estate statutes. And the real estate statutes consist of certain provisions that are in the law books from, let's say, provision 1 to provision 10. And let's say it's called statute 330, section 330. So there are two ways that you can incorporate this into your contract. If you want your real estate deal with somebody else to be governed by that statute, you're gonna, any dispute is going to be presented in front of a bezin. No problem. You're not running afoul of that prohibition, but you want the bezin to decide according to Choka Mekakoyim. So you could write potentially in the contract, the bezin should decide according to section 330, provisions 1 through 10. So says the Minchas Tzvi, maybe that looks like Mechakes Agoyim. Worried about the Shuvah Sarash, but maybe that looks like Mechakes Agoyim. So instead, you know what you should do? Take the text. Take the text from that statute. Say, take out the words, section 330. Take out the words, paragraph 1 through paragraph 10, and just cut and paste the wording of the provisions. If this is the wording that you want to be applicable to your transaction, that you want the bezin to follow, this is the monetary condition. So just cut and paste that wording. Don't say, I want to follow the secular law, Choka Mekakai, section 330, provisions 1, paragraphs 1 through 10. Just say, I want the following words. I want the following conditions. I want the following provisions to apply to our transaction. It just so happens that those provisions are consistent with what is in the statutory books of the secular law. So even Razal Menachem Goldberg said, okay, I hear that. I hear that suggestion. You know, Tzvi Gartner mentioned that suggestion. He said, I don't really see what the difference is, whether you do it one way or the other. L'maisa, you're incorporating the secular statute. Rav Zalman HaChaim said, I hear that that's as a chumra. As a chumra, you could say that. But Mi'ikar Adin said, Rav Zalman HaChaim, he doesn't really see a problem with this. Where did this come up in the discussions with Rav Zalman HaChaim? It came up in the context of the prenuptial agreement of the Beis Din of America, or the Rabbinical Council of America, because the prenuptial agreement was designed in such a way that it really was intended to encourage parties in a divorce proceeding to adjudicate all their cases in front of Beis Din and not secular law. Obviously, one of the advantages of the prenuptial agreement that we all know about is that it helps to bring about the giving of a get. That it says if there's a dispute about the giving of the get, the parties agree to go to Beis Din, they'll follow what Beis Din says, the husband takes upon himself a certain monetary obligation for as long as the parties are living separately, and that also provides an incentive that'll give the get so that he won't have to pay this monetary amount for the rest of his life. All of that is fine and true. But in addition to that, one of the problems was that, particularly coming from the direction of the women, they felt that the rights that they would have in Beis Din, if Beis Din would adjudicate all aspects of a divorce proceeding, might be less than the rights that they would have in secular court. So they were uneasy for that reason, to have the case adjudicated in secular in Beis Din. But Lamai said the halacha is lifneim lo lifneyakum. It doesn't matter whether it's a regular choshen mishpat monetary dispute. It doesn't matter whether it's a divorce proceeding. Whenever you have some type of a disagreement, whenever you have some type of a litigation between two Jewish parties, there's an obligation to bring that litigation in Beis Din as opposed to secular court, even a divorce proceeding. So as Am Nechemya said, if this is what's keeping the women out of Beis Din, just have the option when they sign the prenuptial agreement, obviously the husband would have to agree to this as well, that in the event that there'll be a divorce proceeding and the Beis Din will be deciding the monetary issues, they'll decide according to secular law, whatever the secular law principles of equitable distribution, how the assets are going to be divided, how the maintenance is going to be calculated and so forth. So all of this will be, you know, taken into consideration. The Beis Din is going to follow those principles. It will take in the adjudication of the case. So Tzvi Gardner, also very chashuv Tamei Chacham, raised a question about this. He said, doesn't this run afoul of this principle of the Rashba that you're accepting upon yourself the secular legal system? So as Zalman Nechemya Goldberg responded, this is the exchange, it's in the materials, it's from the Yeshurun Journal. But Zalman Nechemya responded, and it's printed in the Yeshurun Journal, he said that this is no different from the idea that a Shomachinam can take upon himself additional obligations as well. A person can always take upon themselves additional monetary obligations. When is the Rashba applicable? That's when you're repudiating the entire Torah system of law. Here, there's no repudiation of the entire Torah system of law. You're going in front of Beis Din. By and large, halacha is being followed when it comes to the distribution of marital assets. So the parties have determined that their customary way of dealing is more consistent with what's considered to be mikubal, what's considered to be generally practiced in the society around them. And therefore, they're empowering the Beis Din to decide according to those terms and conditions. So that, he said, would be perfectly permissible, even if you actually referred to the statute in the agreement itself. Now, the way in which the Beis Din of America eventually decided to codify this notion is to say, you know what? The primary justification for utilizing the secular law will be if this is the customary, what we call minhag ha-sochrim, between the parties, the customary manner of practice between the parties. So therefore, that's the way it should be incorporated into the agreement, not that we're referring to a specific secular statute. Originally, that was the way, you should know, that it appeared in the original form for many years of the halakha prenuptial agreement. But recently, a number of years ago, we decided that we would change it. And the way that it says right now is that the parties agree that the Beis Din is authorized to decide all monetary matters, including division of property and maintenance that may arise between them based upon principles of equitable distribution and to utilize principles of equitable distribution in accordance with customary practice as the Beis Din deems appropriate according to principles of Jewish law, equity, and local custom, where the discretion is placed in the Beis Din to determine does this fall within the ambit of the minhag ha-sochrim. The truth is that there's an early source for this as well in Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eger's comments to the Shulchan Aruch at the beginning of Kol Shem Mishpat, Siman Gimel. Hold on just 1 second. Rabbi Akiva Eiger comments as follows. He said that he quotes from a Tshuvas Marashach that there was a dispute between two Jewish merchants. And one merchant said, let's adjudicate our dispute in front of the Beis Din. And the other merchant said, what are you talking about? We belong to, let's say, the diamond dealers industry. And the diamond dealers industry, whenever there is any dispute between the diamond dealers, so we have an independent arbitration board, a few diamond dealers who are very knowledgeable in our customs and practices, and they decide in accordance with the principles of our trade. They're not judges on a secular court or anything. It's like an independent arbitration panel, like you have sometimes with the American Architects Association, where if you enter into an agreement with an architect, it will sometimes say at the end, if there's a dispute, so the parties agree, not that they're going to go to secular court, you'll bring it in front of the American Architects Arbitration Board, and they're going to decide according to the principles of the trade. So says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, based on the Maharshach, perfectly fine. The other side that says, I want to go in front of the diamond dealer's arbitration board, they're right. They're right, because that's the minhag hasochim. In the diamond business, it's not decided according to necessarily principles of what's written in the Shulchan Aruch. It's been decided. Everything is decided. You say mazal u'bracha. You have a handshake that seals the deal and it's various transactions. It's not based on simon and sip and shulchan aruch. It's based on whatever are the conventional rules that are followed by the diamond dealers. And it makes sense that any dispute should be decided by this board of arbitrators of the diamond dealers and not be brought to Bezdin. And this is not a violation of our coast. Why is it not a violation of our coast? Because it's basically in accordance with minhag hasochim. And halacha also recognizes minhag hasochim. It's like the Gemara and Baba Metzia, because her puppet says that if you don't, the way that the custom of merchants is that they seal the deal with kinyanim, not by using meshicha or hagbah, but they use a kinyan situmta. They just label barrels a particular way, or they have a handshake, and that's what seals the deal. So then that's considered to be binding up the halacha because of this principle of minhag hasochim. So minhag hasochim is also part and parcel of halacha, something for the Bezdin to take into consideration. But Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this in the context of rent control. He says that if the minhag hasochim, the minhag medina, is that when people rent in certain types of buildings, that you have to keep the same tenant as long as they're willing to pay a certain rent, and you can't raise the rent more than a certain amount each year because of rent control. It says you don't even have to get to the whole principle of dina de mahusa, whether rent control is considered to be incorporated in the law of the land. We say it's not incorporated because it's only between two Jews. Maybe it's something the government really cares about, so it is incorporated. So you don't have to get to that whole question of dina de mahusa. It probably is included in dina de mahusa, but even if it wouldn't be included in dina de mahusa, he said it would be binding as a matter of minhag hasochim, because when you rent out apartments in a particular area, all the landlords know and all the tenants know that these are the principles that are followed. And what difference does it make that the principles happen to be codified in the secular law statutes? These are just the principles that are followed by everybody. And therefore, that automatically becomes incorporated into halacha as well. So by the same principle, if you have a couple that's getting married, a husband and wife, and the way in which they order their monetary affairs is more consistent with the secular custom of equitable distribution and the like, this is what they agree upon, that this is the way in which they're going to do things when they enter into their marriage and they sign a prenuptial agreement. So that becomes their minhag, that becomes a binding upon them as a customary practice, and therefore that's not considered to be machakis. Machakis Agayim is if you say we're going to follow, potentially, if you put into the contract that you're going to follow the law no matter what, even if the law changes and you're not necessarily going to be happy with the changes of the law, or it's not something which the parties anticipate at this point in time, you say no matter what, we're going to follow the legal system, we're going to follow New York law. So that potentially could be a little bit more problematic. You could sometimes justify it that if the parties know that their customary practice is generally going to be consistent with the law anyway, because that's the way they operate. So you might be able to justify such a provision, even if there is a change in the law. But certainly if there's no change in the law, then it's exactly what the law is, more or less exactly the same as what it was at the time they entered into the contract and they wrote that they want to follow this provision. So the general assumption is that they're doing it because they want to follow just the general principles of custom that are practiced in the society around them that they're comfortable with, but not that they're repudiating Torah in a wholesale basis, like the way that the Rashba was describing. So therefore, that type of provision, we feel, at the Bezdin of America anyway, would be binding and would be acceptable when the parties appear in front of the Bezdin. If they didn't sign that provision at the very outset of their contract, but they only sign the provision later on down the road when they want to adjudicate the case in front of the Bezdin. And at that point in time, they say, oh, by the way, we'll come to Bezdin, but we want you to decide according to secular law. So then it's not entirely clear whether they're doing it because this was the custom that they wanted to practice from the outset, or whether they just have more respect for secular law, in which case you could potentially run afoul of the Rashba. So that would be a much more difficult question that the Bezdin would have to consider on a case by case basis. Now, what about the notion of heter al kol? So we mentioned this at the beginning of our discussion, that sometimes the Beis Din actually does give leave to the parties to go to a secular court system, at least to one party. The petitioner wants to bring the case in front of Beis Din. The defendant says, I don't want to go to Beis Din. I refuse to go to Beis Din. Beis Din offers different options. You can choose a different Beis Din. I don't want to go to any Beis Din. What do you do in that particular case? So that's what we call, as a heter or kos, the Beis Din is empowered to give permission to go to secular court. Where does this permission to go to secular court come from? So there are fundamentally two different sources for this. One source is the Gemara in Baba Kama. How do we know that the basis for the proposition that if you call your friend and your friend does not respond, Rami Guda Rabba Shadi Bay, you could throw a wall at him, you could stonewall him, you could throw a wall at him. Woo! That sounds like a pretty drastic remedy. You throw a wall at somebody. So he quotes the pasuk. That you didn't have a chance, that you didn't take advantage of the opportunity to purify yourself. That's it. You blew it. So what's the Gemara talking about over here? So the Rosh quotes of a Paltoy Gon. And the Rosh says that the Paltoy Gon interprets this Gemara as being the source for Heter or Kos. He says that Ruven Sheesh Lo Tfiyah Al Shimon, Reuven has a claim against Shimon. Masar Lovoy Moladin. Shimon refuses to adjudicate in front of a Beis Din. How do we know Shirashai Lahavil Arkol Shonachim that he can bring him to a non-Jewish court from this principle of Karis Kavach Loanach Ramiguda Vishadi Luya? You could throw the wall at him. That's the idea. Then in such a case, you would be allowed to bring him to the secular court. Kedei Lahotzi Yeshalom Mitachas Yado. This is the source. Now the Sefer Trumos brings a different source, and that's the Gra quotes this in Sifkaten Hay and Simon Chavav as well, and that is where the Gemara in Gittin on Da Peches Amid Beis, the Mishnah over there, the Gemara there is brings the drasha of Lifneim Lo Lifnei Akum, but the Mishnah says that if you have a Beis Din that Paskin, that Reuven owes money that Reuven's obligated to give a get to his wife. So then if Reuven still refuses to give a get, but the Beis Din paskin that you can compel Reuven to give a get to his wife, so then it would be permissible and perfectly warranted for a secular court to compel Reuven to give a get to his wife based on the principle that they're telling him, I say Mashi Yisrael Omim Lecha, just do that which the Beis Din paskin that you're obligated to do. They serve effectively as an agent of the Beis Din to carry out the verdict of the Beis Din. So says the Grub, by the same token, Reuven has a claim where he could potentially gain relief by bringing the claim in Beis Din. Shimon's refusing to come to Beis Din. So then the secular court essentially is serving as the agent of the Beis Din in order for Reuven to be able to bring his claim. What's a nafkamina between whether you're learning from the source of the Sefer HaTrumos or whether you're learning from the source of a Paltoy Gon? So Chaim Cohn, in his essay, which is all in the Sefer Divrei Mishpah, which is also in these materials, says, I'll give you a nafkamina. The Poskim talk about, the Nesivos talks about, the Aruch HaShulchan talks about, when is it that you give dispensation for Reuven to be able to bring his claim against Shimon? There has to be some sort of a basis for the claim that whatever relief Reuven is going to receive in secular court, Reuven could have received in Beis Din. Otherwise, he's taking more than he's entitled to. It could be a shayla of gezela, as Rabbi Akiva Eger points out. So if the entire basis for heter or kos is asem ashisol omim lecha, so then the Beis Din has to first make a determination. It's not so easy to make such a determination if Shimon isn't providing all of his defenses and counterclaims and so forth. But Beis Din has to be able to make a determination that Reuven could potentially prevail upon his claim, or has a likelihood, a good chance of prevailing upon his claim in Beis Din. And only then would Beis Din give Reuven the leave to be able to bring the claim in secular court. And then he'd have to figure out exactly how much would he be entitled to in Beis Din. If he gets even one penny more than that in secular court, so then he has to return the money if he gets it too much, more than what he otherwise would be entitled to. However, if your basis for the heter or kos is the Gemara in Baba Kama, says of Chaim Cohn, so it's where it says that you have to, Rami Gudar Abba, Shadi Bay, that you throw a brick wall at somebody, So throwing a brick wall at somebody sounds more like a knas, that it's a penalty. The Shimon refused to come to Bezdin, we're penalizing him. Once we're penalizing him, we can penalize him, they'll have to pay more than when he would have been obligated to pay according to strict Torah law. So then we don't have to scrutinize the claim of Reuven to determine exactly how much Reuven would have been entitled to receive in order to warrant the right of Reuven to pursue his claim in the secular court. And it says that the Rav Chaim Cohn, that it would seem to him that the minug of a Batei Din is not to scrutinize the claim. If the Shimon refuses to come, how can you scrutinize a claim properly when one party is refusing to come altogether? You just say to Reuven, listen, Shimon's refusing to come. You have the right to pursue your case in secular court as a knas. And in fact, before Rav Chaim Cohn wrote his article, Rav Meir Auerbach, about 100 years ago or so, I think, in his Sefer Imrei Bina, a very, very fine Sefer, you'll find in the materials as well, a discussion of a number of the issues that relate to Yisrael Kos and the like. Rav Meir Auerbach said the same thing. He said that because of the fact that this is fundamentally a knas, when Shimon's refusing to go to Bezdin, so we don't scrutinize how much Reuven's going to be able to receive in secular court, even if he ends up being able to receive more than what he would have gotten in Bezdin, so that he would be entitled to keep as a matter of knas. Obviously not if it trespasses upon the range of Issa V'Heta, if he's going to pick up prohibited ribis, prohibited interest. Okay, that's a different story. Different story about ribis pigurim is a big question, meaning the interest if somebody doesn't pay their debt on time. And it's not that they have a document that says they're obligated to pay interest. That would for sure not be permissible to collect. If they have if the document just says they have to pay principal, but the court itself says, since you waited 5 months, we're going to impose interest upon you. You never agreed to pay this interest to begin with. They're going to impose it upon you. Some poskim, including the Nesivus Shalom of Rav Gelber, of Yosef Gelber, say that might not be ribbis, according to Ikar Adin, but it's Mexican ribbis. It looks like ribbis. So sometimes a Bezdin could authorize a person to keep that amount. He brings one case where a father was a deadbeat dad, and he was late in terms of child support payments, and the court said that the wife is entitled to all the late payments plus a penalty amount. So is that something which is prohibited? So he said in this particular case, because the Shuras Adin, because of the terrible way that the deadbeat dad had acted, and the fact that it's not really ribbis meikar adin, and once the Bezdin authorizes the wife to go to secular court, it's not really gezel either. So he said in this case, he thought you could be mako that she could keep the extra amount. So that's penalty amounts that are imposed by the secular court have to be analyzed on a case-by-case basis. But otherwise, there would be permission given in this respect. Now, it happens that the policy, for example, in the Bezdin of America, is that there is a certain amount of pre-clearance which is made with respect to any claim that is made, so that it really does not completely bypass this requirement of the Nesivus, this requirement of the Aruch HaShulchan for Bezdin to make a determination that there's at least some sort of a chance that the plaintiff's claim would have merit in Bezdin, that the Bezdin of America, as a general rule, requires the parties to present their claims ahead of time before they even summon a second party to come to the Bezdin. And if the Bezdin secretary looks at the claim and determines that even in a best case scenario, that even if everything that was being alleged by the plaintiff would be proven to be true, they still would not be able to recover in any Bezdin, because there's just no way that halacha would provide a basis for the person to recover. So Bezdin won't send the summons in the first place. If Bezdin's not going to send the summons in the first place, so they're certainly not going to give dispensation for the person to pursue the claim in our coast. So they feel it's a case that can't even be opened up altogether in Bezdin, because it would just have no merit according to Jewish law. We had a case like this about a year and a half ago, where the Bezdin rejected the claim, said we can't send the summons because it'll be a waste of everybody's time. There's no way that you can win. So the party said, okay, so at least give me a heter al kos. At least let me go to secular court. The Bezdin, no, that's not the way it works. In such a case, of course you can. You don't have permission to go to secular court. So therefore, there is a certain amount of preclearance that is appropriate. I feel with that preclearance, so there's a satisfaction not only of the shita of a paltoi gom, that the whole thing is a knas. So that would relate to if you end up collecting more in secular court than you would have gotten in Bezdin, you don't have to give it back. It also satisfies to a certain degree as well, I think, the opinion of the Nesivus and the Aruch HaShulchan, that you need a certain amount of preclearance before you would authorize somebody to go to secular court, even in a situation of recalcitrance. How can we have this notion of heter or kos altogether, of giving the person the leave or the right to be able to go to secular court. When we said that it's a ritual prohibition, it's not just a davar shebimamon. We started off saying it's a davar shebi'isur to go in front of a secular court. So how can we give Reuven the leave in the first place to go in front of the secular court to pursue his claim against Shimon when Shimon is recalcitrant and refusing to go to Beis Din? So the answer is very simple. Like the Chassam Sofer writes in Choshev Mishpat, Siman Gimel, in his Shuvos, Chassam Sofer explains that in this situation, the secular court fundamentally serves as an agent, as a shliach of the Beis Din. Like the Mishnah in Gittin says, that you're saying, Aseh Mashi Yisrael Omrim Lecha. Once the Beis Din is in the picture, the Beis Din is the court of primary jurisdiction. And it's the Beis Din that is authorizing the party to go to a secular court. So then the secular court simply becomes an extension of the Beis Din under those circumstances. So it's really all being administered under the auspices of the Beis Din, and therefore it's not Merim Yad B'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu, and it's not Miyakir Elilim, because it's the Beis Din that's governing the process. It's the same consideration, the same argument that's presented by many of the poskim, the majority of the poskim, when it comes to enforcing a decision of the Beis Din. If Beis Din has already given its verdict, and now the one party is refusing to pay, so can the other party go to secular court in order to enforce the verdict of the Beis Din? So here as well, there's a little bit of a question. Do you need the permission of the Beis Din in the first place? Now, at the Beis Din of America, at the Beis Din of the Chicago Rabbinical Council, the permission is built in, because the Beis Din writes in the arbitration agreement that in the event that one party does not pay the amount they're obligated to pay according to the verdict of the Beis Din, then the other party is allowed to enforce the decision of the Beis Din in secular court. So it's built in. Once it's built in, so you already have the reshus of the Beis Din. But let's say it wouldn't be built in to the Shtar Beruven, into the arbitration agreement itself. Would one party have the right, even without asking for reshus of the Beis Din, to go and to enforce the verdict? So the truth is that in this particular case as well, as the poskim explain, there's an article in the materials by Ben Sion Vosner about this, the son of Shmuel Vosner Zatzal, which he explains that this is really just an extension of the other din, that here the court is serving as the agent of the Beis Din, and really it's the Mamar seems to write this pretty clearly in Siman Chavav, in the name of Rav Shri Ragon, that you can go in front of the secular courts in order to enforce the decision that was already handed down by the Beis Din. The Marashach says the same thing. The Marasham says the same thing. Rav Shlomo Kluger says the same thing. And this seems to really be the consensus, because this is not dishonoring the Beis Din. On the contrary, adarabba, this is honoring the Beis Din by ensuring that the verdict that was issued by the Beis Din is going to be upheld and enforced by the secular court. The secular court, in this sense, serves as the shoterim, as the enforcers of the Beis Din. We know that the pasuk in Shoftim says, Shoftim is shoterim, titen lecha b'chol shareka. The Tanchuma says, im ein shoter, ein shofet. If you don't have an enforcer of the Beis Din decision, so then you don't really have a shofet, and you don't have a viable Beis Din in the first place. It's for that reason that the Neos Deshe and others said that nowadays, when a party agrees to come in front of a Beis Din, that's not sufficient. The agreement alone is not sufficient to label the party as not recalcitrant. The party has to sign on the dotted line. They have to sign an arbitration agreement that would cause the decision of the Beis Din to be enforceable by a secular court. Because if they don't sign on the dotted line, then it's basically the equivalent of their saying, I don't really accept upon myself the jurisdiction of the Beis Din. I don't like the verdict. I'm not going to follow it. All right. I'm not going to sign the arbitration agreement. So it's not going to be able to be enforceable. So the refusal to sign an arbitration agreement is considered to be an act of recalcitrance, because you need the arm of the secular court system to enforce the decisions of the Beis Din. That would be perfectly acceptable. So question, can you utilize the secular court system, for example, in order to file for a temporary injunction, in order to file for a, let's say, that the other party has money in the bank, and you're afraid that this is the money that you need in order to pay for the claim that you are asserting against the other party. It's like the partnership assets, for example, is a partnership dispute. You're afraid they're going to run away with all the money. You don't have the ability to go to Beis Din in order to have a Besdin put an injunction on the bank account to say that you can't spend the money, because Besdin doesn't have jurisdiction until the parties sign on a shtar beruvin, on an arbitration agreement. So in this particular case, so Moshe Feinstein writes in his Tshuvos that it's not considered to be a violation of our cause to just go to secular court in order to put a hold on the person's assets until the matter can be adjudicated in Besdin, because Besdin doesn't have the ability to do that unless the parties have already signed the shtar beruvin. So Shmuel Bozna writes in the Shevet Alevi, if the matter is already in front of Besdin, if Besdin actually has jurisdiction, so then there are rules and regulations about when an injunction is appropriate or not and so forth, and Besdin can make a determination and you present it in front of Besdin. But if Besdin doesn't have the jurisdiction altogether because the party's never signed a shtar beruvin to go in front of that Besdin, the Besdin is just first beginning the summons process, so then, according to Rav Moshe, it would not be a violation for one party to file for an injunction as long as the injunction papers make it abundantly clear that to the extent that anything needs to be litigated, that it's going to be litigated only in Besdin. There's a little bit of a discussion about a chov baror. What if Reuven has a very clear-cut debt against Shimon? A promissory note. Promissory note says he's obligated to pay $10,000. It's like no ribbis, no ribbis issues, just a clear-cut promissory note. And Shimon is stonewalling him. He's refusing to pay. So do we say in this particular case, Reuven can go straight to secular court? So Rav Mordechai Eliyahu has an article in the Tuchumin Journal, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu Zatzal, that I put in the materials, in which he seems to indicate that in that case, it's only an enforcement action. There's nothing to be litigated, so you can go straight to the secular courts. There are various tshuvas of the Maharsham. We quote Rav Avraham Mibachach as having a similar shita, but it's a little bit confusing because it sounds only a little bit, because the other party wouldn't agree to go to Besdin altogether, wouldn't subscribe to what Besdin has to say. So my own opinion is it's difficult to rely upon this. Somebody, Mamas, just called me last night with a shayla. I said, look, there are poskim who say this, but in my opinion, it's difficult to rely upon this because you never know. It might, what seems like a clear-cut hold, a clear-cut obligation to one person, might not seem like a clear-cut obligation to the other person. So it seems to me that you have to at least summon the person to Besdin. Maybe they might have certain defenses against the claim before you would have the right to assert an enforcement action against a chov baror, what you consider to be an unquestionable claim. The whole reason parties come to the Besdin is because often they have very different perspectives. Ultimately, we look forward to the day that we'll be able to be Makayim Mashiva Shoptein and Gvar Ishana, V'yoratzenu Kebatzchila, V'yasimim Menor Yagon Ma'anacha, that we should be able to restore Dayanim and all of the pristine glory, and to have the restoration of the great Sanhedrin. In the meantime, we have to do our best job to maintain our Batei Din according to the highest standards of professionalism and integrity.